for the plug, we're talking about one of my very favorite universes, The Tales of the Bots by Sci-Fi Girl 47, specifically Bedtime Stories and Nightmares and Stories Told with Silence, which are two of the early stories that introduce DJ as Stephen Toney's child, essentially. These stories are special to me because Sci's works were the very first ones that I read in Stony, and they set me up with a lot of the way that I feel about them, my other ships, the characters I like, the types of tropes and stories I look for. All of that was kind of born from this first place. My first pick was actually in Toasterverse, which is a different verse of hers, Four or Five Reasons for Kidnapping Tony Stark. But after I devoured that, I went right on to read all of Tales of the Bots and still adore it and still think it has some of the best parenting, the best kids, the best complicated Steve Toney characterization that just nails it, the best team, some of the best OCs ever. And it just, I just love it. I still love it. So I asked Flame to read it so that we could talk about it today. And I'm really excited to do so.
Yeah. Whereas like Farrah just insinuated, I read them this week. So part of coming into fandom so late is that you've missed a lot of the big, or not late, there is no late, recently, is that I've missed a lot of the bigger kind of canonical, these are the greats that were published in years previous. So I really love getting caught up on stuff. And so I have now also devoured the entire Tales of the Bots verse.
I think it's interesting that, I mean, it's cool that there are some things that are fanon that are very clearly born out of specific things. And specific fics, specific arts or what have you, or specific headcanons from specific fans. But you hit a point in time where the origins of them are lost and people just take them as gospel. I have to do this. I'm so sorry, people. I have to do this. I did this on Discord and I got yelled at, but Butterfingers is not a real bot. There are not three bots, there are two bots. And part of the reason why people think there's a third bot is because Bless Her Sci always puts three bots in the stories. And I think that Tales of the Bots and Toasterverse are to blame for so much of fandom thinking that Butterfingers is a separate bot when it's actually just a nickname Tony uses for dummy once. Canonically, there are only two bots. And I'm sorry if that broke something within you, but I feel like it's important that people are aware of it. By all means, put Butterfingers in your stories. But Dummy and you are the only two bots in canon.
Do you feel better?
I feel better. I had to get it off my chest. Now is the time. It's happened. It's over. Anyone who needs to wipe that from your memories, now is the time to do it. And we're going to move on.
Yeah, I'm still going to write three bots. So I don't care. But I'm also the person that, like, when I read that Clint hid in the vents, I just assumed that I forgot a scene in the Avengers.
Right.
So, like, I was like, these people watch the movies more than I do. He must hide in the vents. Oh, no, wait. Fandom just invented that. So,
yeah. And I mean, there's a history of Tony and Roombas, and most of that was started by Sci. So, if you haven't read Sci-Fi Girl stuff, then you're missing out on all of the birth of the great Roomba adoration in fandom.
Interesting. And you and I have both put Tony and Roombas in our fix. So.
Yeah, Joshua is an homage both to Saber's squirrel Joshua from CN and to the Roombas. Also to my own Roomba, whose name is Glen Coco, and his battery is dead, but I still love him.
Because he goes Glen Coco?
Yeah, he's even got little stickers on him that say, "You go, Glen Coco."
Oh, I love it.
He needs a lot of encouragement because he's like a version one Roomba and he's not that great, but he's a part of the family. We love him.
I have a Roomba in my very first fic that Tony invents entirely to prove a point to Pepper and beat Ornery.
So, sounds on brand.
As on brand, yeah. So, speaking of bots, so I will say for me, the thing that I took away in terms of parenting, the thing that I took away the most, and the kind of my very first gut reaction, was that Tony cannot accept that there are multiple versions of parenthood in a way that Steve innately understands.
Yeah.
And when I headcanon this, and I have no idea if Sci thought of this, but when I headcanon this, this makes complete sense to me because Tony was raised in, as far as we know, even canonically, vague isolation from other adults. Like, he didn't really, there wasn't a neighborhood that he grew up in. There wasn't, like, he saw Howard, and then he saw Stane, and, like, those, and he saw Jarvis-ish, but, like, really, it was Howard. Whereas Steve grew up in the 40s in Brooklyn and probably interacted with, like, 30 kinds of fathers on a daily basis.
Right.
And so he would have a deeper understanding just innately that, like, of course there's different ways to be a dad. Of course you're not going to be Howard. And all Tony can see is not only his own pain of Howard and his own neuroses, but like this calcification of that this was the only way to be a dad. And a huge part of Tony's journey in this whole verse is learning how to be a dad and not Howard.
Yeah. It's really, you know, he struggles with the very concept of having something that he can't protect or fix or control or keep safe in the same way that he could when Dummy was a bot, because he doesn't trust himself to be that protective person. He doesn't know how. He never felt safe when he was a child. So how can he make another child feel safe? It feels outside of his toolbox. And I think that actually, like, I love how complicated the relationships are here. And I love that Steve's natural abilities as a parent both comfort Tony and frustrate him. It makes it harder and easier to co-parent with him.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And one of the really wonderful things about this fic, the whole series, and Sy's writing in general, when she writes both with kid fics and sort of the team as a family thing, is that every branch, every relationship is different and explored and well done. So you get to see that Tony and Steve have a real relationship. And it's affected by DJ, but it doesn't revolve around him. They have their own relationship. Tony has a relationship with DJ. Steve has a relationship with DJ. They have a family unit as the three of them. And then especially as you continue to read on in the series, DJ has a relationship with each of the other Avengers. The Avengers have relationships with Steve and Tony. Like, everything, the characterization doesn't just characterize the individual characters, it characterizes all the various different branches of all their various different relationships as well, in a way that just makes it really rich and deep.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I told you, this is quite simply the best found family fic I've ever read.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, like, this is one of those fics where, like, I finished it and I was like, well, I'm never writing again. Like, no. Why do I bother? She's done it all. but it's just this idea, because, like, how you just talked is how humans work.
Yeah.
But it's incredibly complicated to show all of those things in a certain way.
Especially in, like, 30K. Like,
yeah. Like, yeah, she's a magician. It's annoying. She's so good, it's annoying. That's really what it comes down to.
Is that the quote we're going to pull for this episode?
Probably. Sci-Fi Girl is so good, I'm annoyed. Yeah. It's okay. I frequently tell other people, like, you're so good at this, I'm angry at you. So.
It's kind of like, I think it's a Venn diagram with cute aggression. Like, I often want to squeeze my dog until she pops because she's so cute and I can't take it. And I think sometimes we get that with other people's writing. It's like, oh, it's so good, I just want to shred it.
Yeah.
Well, I got a comment that someone wanted to print my fic out, crumple it up, and eat it. And that was their way of showing affection. So.
Sure. All yeah. God's children.
Yeah, yep. It's valid.
It's valid.
I think
if they did, please let us know.
Yeah.
And please come onto the pod and talk to us about digesting paper.
Tell us, have you ever eaten a fic? How did it feel?
I think, so in terms of, like, Steve and Tony in particular, mm-hmm. and in their relationship, I like that they were established-ish when this all started happening. Like, yeah. This was still pretty fresh, and so they were building something together as the two of them. That then was interrupted, but, like, instead of just then focusing on them as parents, like, she essentially just acknowledged this detour, and, like, they still, like, it passes the, like, whatever the parental equivalent of the Bechdel test is. Yeah. Like, they still have conversations about them that's not about DJ in a way that, like, I mean, you said this already, but I'm just gonna say it again, but that feels... that, like, led them to still being them as characters. Like, this is a canon adjacent fic, like this, he's still Iron Man, there's still Cap, there's still the Avengers, and all of those dynamics still have to happen regardless of DJ. I particularly noticed that and saw that in all of the interactions with the CPS agent.
Yeah.
And in how, like, I love that Coulson just took care of that, because of course he did.
Yeah.
And it was like the most I could just hear Clark Gregg's voice in my head the entire time it was happening. It was just impeccable.
She writes great, Coulson. And if you like that, if you go into the Toasterverse, there's also Hollow Your Bones Like a Bird, which is like possibly the best Clint Coulson fic out there. So for people who want to keep following the web, that's a great place to go.
Noted. I don't ship them at all, but I'm fascinated whenever they show up in other fics. So I love it.
You might after you read that one.
I might. Maybe. It's a whole... Ships that I do and do not ship is a separate conversation. We'll have another time. But... Because I don't often... I have almost no TPs. I have a whole lot that I'm completely neutral on.
Yeah. I'm the same way. But, you know, as I say, these are my fundamental fics. They built a lot of my fundamental shit.
Yeah, so of course. Whereas a lot of my fundamental fics are Stuckoni. So, for whatever reason.
Took me a long time to even find Stuckoni.
Yeah, no, dove right into that one real quick. So, thanks 2019. It was all right there. So... But also, in terms of their parenting, it has to evolve a whole lot, because DJ is a child who's also a robot, who's also a child. They have to, but like, he still hits a lot of the developmental milestones, but also doesn't.
Yeah, I think he's a realistic child in the way that he's not cookie cutter. He's not a bag of flour with a smile painted on at all. He's much more than a proper a plot device. And he's challenging and complicated, and in many ways, very not normal, if you know what I mean by normal. Like, most kids are not also robots. So I think we can safely say he's not a normal child.
I would like to just categorically say that no other child is also a robot except Vicky from Small Wonder. Like, I think this and that are kind of it. So,
So we can confidently acknowledge that. But he also is a child in many ways, and he does many things. He has that childlike point of view that we were talking about. He hits a lot of those, even if he doesn't hit the milestones, he hits a lot of the perspective things that we were talking about. Everything you can understand from the perspective of a 3 or 4 year old who also used to be a robot sometimes, you know, or is a robot sometimes, you know, like how can such an unrealistic situation make such a realistic child?
I think so the best example of that to me is when he is transitioning between like bot child and teenager in the scene with the CPS worker. And he articulates that, like, he prefers to be the child because he can make mistakes easier.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really still know what he's doing. And he doesn't know how to follow his prime directive for the creating unit as a teenager. But he knows he has to because, like, he has to protect them, and that's what teenagers do. But he doesn't really know how to do that, so he prefers being a kid because he can get away with more.
Yeah.
And he can make mistakes. And I just wonder, like, how many movies did Dummy actually accidentally watch to pick up on that?
Yeah.
But it's a real, like, that's one of the things of a preteen that really gets it. Like, when preteens especially get in trouble, they often revert directly. So this is like, you know, 9, 10 to 12, 13, depending on the child. They revert to like 5 or 6 year old behavior.
Yeah, because they used to get away with stuff.
And it was usually, for a majority of children, the time where their mistakes had the least amount of, like, punitive punishment with them.
Yeah.
Like, mistakes were often treated as a growing experience instead of punitive. And that's a little bit, like, what he exhibits here. And that just, like, I read that scene and, like, closed my laptop for a minute, and I was like, yep, that's... childhood. That's adulthood. Yeah. Like, I would like to be tiny again so I don't have all these responsibilities. That makes sense to me.
And we can go back to talking like we did in the Creator Corner about, you know, this concept of like, if you make your child too perfect or too precocious or too special or too adorable, that can turn some people off. But DJ is adorable and funny and also challenging and frustrating. And I think that he really is a good example of how you can make a realistic child also be a character that people love for their complexity, and that a child character does not have to be perfect, and in fact shouldn't be perfect if you're trying to write a realistic character. But that doesn't mean that they're not cute, that they're not, you know, a kid you'd like to have.
Yeah.
This is also for Steve. I think there's a lot of like this, it's an interesting exploration of some of the aspects of Steve's character, because he steps in right away. He can understand the places where Tony struggles here, and he recognizes what Dummy needs early on. But as time goes on, you get to see more and more of how shaken he is, how challenging he finds this, how unsure he is. And that a lot of the time when he's with Dummy and he seems comfortable and confident, it's a front that he's putting on for the kid. And you even see that there are times when he's putting on a front for Tony too. And the more that's challenged, and also the more of himself that he lets Tony see, the more you get to see that it isn't easy for him. He just has a good understanding of putting what the child needs ahead of his own emotional satisfaction. And both the importance of that, but also the fact that if he doesn't then seek out his own outlets, his own places to be, you know, selfish or examine his own feelings, that you can't just ignore that forever. You know, he hits walls where he's just run out. And Tony is more likely to fluctuate more within a smaller period of time. He's more up and down. He has moments where everything's easy, moments where everything's hard, but it's almost like a constant outlet. So he fluctuates more, but steadier.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And that fits Steve's personality kind of in general, where he is the one who is always in charge, not only of other people, but of himself.
Yeah. And he's used to having to, you know, like if we look at canon, we see when Peggy dies, he has to go be in a hallway by himself. And, you know, there's just this constant need for him to put on a brave face and look like he's in control and be a representative of a certain approach to things, a certain stoicism. But that doesn't mean he doesn't have feelings. He suffers greatly, but by himself. And the addition of DJ to their relationship forces him to approach that part of himself, I think, sooner and more intensely than it would have if it were just the two of them.
Yeah, and I think for me, one of the dynamics of Steve Tony in particular is that idea of masks, and that each of them wears, each of them is a performer all the time in various ways. And that Steve's performance, like, he never really left the USO girls.
Yeah.
He just transitioned roles. He just went from spandex to Kevlar. And it's still a performance because fundamentally he's lonely and in pain.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. And the people that he can let those masks down with, like, in canon, we know it's Nat and Sam and Bucky and Tony. Like, they're the ones that teach him how to be himself in a way as they reflect him back to himself. And that sounds messy, but I hope that was clear.
Yeah.
And DJ becomes a part of that in this as well, that DJ reflects back to Steve part of the caretaker that Steve attempts to be as Cap. And DJ lets him be it as Steve in a really, like, DJ has no idea who Cap is and doesn't really care. In it, especially at the beginning, like, Dummy understands that Cap is a role, but like not in the same way that anybody else does. And the Steve-ness of Steve is what's significantly more important to that relationship than anything else. And I think that allows him then to be more vulnerable with Tony quicker than he would have. And their apology scenes were some of my favorite as well. Like, hey, I really fucked this up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to work this out together because none of us know what we're doing.
Yeah. There's a great way of having, you know, there's still emotional development. There's still an arc there, and Cy still writes, you know, misunderstandings and you know, the kinds of tropes that we like to read in a fic that's ultimately a romance. But
yeah,
with this layer of adult communication, which means, you know, it is at times honest, it is just at times dishonest, even sometimes to, you know, oneself. But it's there. It's not just a complete vacuum of communication. It's a real attempt, even if it's not always successful. There's something else that I would say is a trope of found kid fics, and that's the concept of it only being temporary. And I think that's an interesting thing to explore, that you know, it comes into play in de-aging fics as well. Though with de-aging fics, the expectation from the reader is it sort of has to be temporary. Whereas with this one, you know, you really are kind of torn during the first fic if you want him to be a bot again or not. Like, he's such, I don't know. I think that the reader feels as much as Tony and Steve do, that if they were asked to choose, they wouldn't be able to. And Tony thinks or says more than once that he wants it to be Dummy's choice. And then ultimately, obviously, it ends up essentially being his choice. But yeah, I just think that the temporary, you know, Steve tends to be more, he's a child now, so we have to treat him like a child. Tony tends to be more, he's going to turn back into a bot someday. And I feel like we see a lot of Tony's fear of loss, which is obviously one of the big themes of the first one. And also, like, weirdly, but as a foster pet mom, I've had about 70 foster pets, and this idea of loving something temporary is something that I'm really connected to. And I get asked more than any other question when I tell people that I'm a foster. People say, oh my God, I would fall in love with them. I couldn't possibly do it. And my answer is always, yeah, I fall in love with them. Of course I fall in love with them. I care for them. I love them very deeply, but I know that they're here temporarily. So my love isn't lessened by the fact that I know they're leaving. And I don't think I love them any less, but I do love them differently, I guess. And part of that love is being happy when they leave, because I know that they're going, you know, onto their actual life, and that it opens up space for me to be a transition space for some other animal in need. And I think that's something that, you know, that feeling of temporariness is something that all parents face, because they know, as you were talking before, they're going to have to transition from being a parent to being a friend. And when you have one of these fics where it's like, here's a kid, we don't know what's going to happen with it, you get that like dialed up to 3 million.
Yeah. And then you add this into their lives are very like the threat of death constantly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is always temporary in a way. Like, it's one of the, I mean, we can all talk about that's the reason that Tony flew himself into the nuke hole, you know, like death is such, to quote Hamilton, like, I imagine death so much it feels more like a memory. Like, they know what that is intimately, that life is really fleeting, and Tony always wants to kind of like jumpstart that.
Yeah.
And like, fine, like, let's just get it over with.
And it totally changes when you have something that relies on you now.
Yeah. And that's part of his journey in the whole work, actually, is how to remain himself and still live for other people, and what that kind of looks like. And arguably that's his journey in canon. So
yeah. And there's this question of like, you know, if you sacrifice yourself for other people, there's validity in that, but there's also the question of, you know, who's going to be there to save them now that you're gone, kind of thing.
Yeah.
that matters too. And when you've got this singular life that is, you know, your family, your piece of your heart, then, you know, how do you now make those judgment calls about what sacrifice is the most important sacrifice? Wow, we got deep here.
We did. Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, this is the thing. This fic explored so much.
Yeah.
That if you were like me and you didn't read this before, we cannot recommend it highly enough. Not only for the kid parent aspect, but please read it just for Coulson. So it's just so perfect. It like made me ache. And we'd love to hear what you think about anything we brought up, anything we didn't bring up. I mean, this is a masterwork, so obviously we missed things. And
it's a conversation I'd love to keep going. And I want to hear, you know, on all the things on this episode, but also for this, parents who read these stories, do you feel differently? Like, how did they affect you? Or, you know, maybe some people read this before they had kids and they have kids now. And, you know, those are some perspectives I would absolutely love to hear from.
Absolutely. So hit us up in all the usual places.